with like Pauly Shore. And...
Oh man. Cool. Well, yeah. I mean, I have to say, as somebody who just graduated and is like about to go into probably a few years of freaking out about what I'm going to do with myself, mm-hmm. it's very inspiring to see somebody who balances a bunch of different things.
Oh, thanks.
You know, it's cool because I feel like the world likes to tell you that you know, if you choose academia or you choose music or art or like, you know, it's like, what type of person are you? Like, let's put you in a box so we can like figure it out, or even like the people in your life. And
totally.
It can be really easy to feel like you do have to just like follow.
I've struggled with that so much. It's always like I was supposed to move to Toronto this year to pursue comedy, and then I got offered a funded PhD position. So mm-hmm. I was like, shit, like now I have to choose. Like, yeah. I have to choose again. I keep coming to these crossroads where I have to pick. I feel like I have to pick one or the other. Mm-hmm. But the reality is that the other things still remain open mm-hmm. as long as you consciously make time for them in your life.
Yeah.
It's like when I was a teenager, my English teacher gave me a copy of The Bell Jar by Sylvia Plath because I wrote a really angsty poem for a poetry assignment. And he was like, you should read this. And I was like, thank you. When I read it, I was so grateful because yeah. it was amazing. It was like reading Catcher in the Rye, I imagine, for girls. Like, you're like, yeah. And there's this scene where she describes, like, thinking about the future, and she envisions it as, like, sitting. She says, sitting in the crotch of a fig tree, and you look up and you see all these big, juicy figs that beckon and wink, and one is a career as like a woman in advertising, and one is being a mother and having children, and one is something else. And she just sits there looking up at them, and they all look so good, but she doesn't know which one to pick. And while she's looking, they all start to rot and fall off the tree. And I've always been like, oh my God. But then when I feel like I'm at these crossroads, I'm like, this is the fig tree. Yeah. Like, I feel like that is a real thing that you have to deal with. Like, mm-hmm. like, picking a path, but it doesn't matter.
If you want to try something, just go do it.
Yeah. I believe it's like a flat earth. It's like flat earth theory. There's no paths, just yep. one big plane.
Yep, there's no right or wrong, just the choices that you make.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I'll let you get out of here so you can set up for your live set.
Sweet. Yeah.
Thank you so much for chatting with me.
No, thank you for having me on your show.
So stoked to turn down all my laughter as I made the mic clip. Cool.
As a station, we believe in playing content with artistic and cultural merit, and sometimes that category includes material which can be construed as offensive. For those who have children nearby or are sensitive to provocative material, the following broadcast may have strong language, themes, or be otherwise objectionable. Please consider tuning out and revisiting CITR after this program.
Good morning and happy International Women's Day. You are listening to CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from the unceded ancestral territories of the Hukkaminam-speaking Musqueam people at the University of British Columbia. My name is Madeline Taylor. I'm the program manager here at CITR. I come from settler heritage, and I want to thank the Musqueam people. We are uninvited guests on their lands, and today of all days, they deserve acknowledgement of that fact. So for International Women's Day, I am joined in studio by Carly Baker, a Cree Métis Icelandic author from Stolo Territory, whose first book, Bad Endings, is just about to be published by Anvil Press on March 24th. But before we get going with some readings and interview questions, we're going to have a bit of a banger here. This is Queen Latifah with Ladies First to start you out this International Women's Day.
The rhyme, it is wicked. Those that don't know how to be pros get evicted. A woman could bear you, break you, take you. Now it's time to rhyme. Can you relate to a sister dope enough to make you holler and scream?
Hey, yo, let me take it from here, queen. Excuse me, but I think I'm about due to get into precisely what I am about to do. I'm conversating to the folks who have no whatsoever clue. So listen very carefully as I break it down for you. Merrily, merrily.
beat and rhymes, my sisters have employed. Slickers be throwing down the sound, totally a yes. Let me state the position. Ladies first, yes?
Yes.
Yes,
woman is gracious, see, I know that all the fellas out there will agree with me, not for being one, but for being with one, cause when it's time for loving, it's the woman that gets them strong, stepping, strutting, moving on, rhyming, cutting, and not forgetting, we are the ones to give birth to the new generation of prophets, cause it's late, I break into a lyrical freestyle, grab the mic, look at the crowd and see smiles, cause they see a woman standing up on her own two, sloppy slouching is something I won't do, something that we
can't flow.
Stereotypes, they got to go.
Got to go.
I'ma mess around and flip the scene into reverse.
With what?
With a little touch of ladies first. Divine in my mind expands throughout the universe. A female rapper with a message to send. The Queen Latifah is a perfect specimen.
My sister, can I get some?
Sure, Moni Love, grab the mic and get dumb.
Yo, praise me not for being simply what I am. Born in L-O-N-D-O and down American. You dig exactly where I'm coming from. You want righteous rhyme and I'ma give you some. To enable you to age yourself and get paid. And the material that has no meaning I wish to play. Pay me every bit of your attention. Like mother, like daughter, I would also like to mention. I wish for you to bring me to the rhythm of which is now systematically given. Desperately stressing, I'm the daughter of a sister who's the mother of a brother who's the brother of another. Plus one more. All four have a job to do. We do and it respect due to the mother who's the root of it. And next up is me, the M-O-N-I-E-L-O-V-E. And I'm first because I'm an L-A-D-I-E.
Contact and in fact, the style it gets harder. Cooling on the scene with my European partner. Laying down track after track, waiting for the climax. When I get there, that's when I tax the next man or the next woman. It doesn't make a difference. Keep the competition coming. And I recite chapter and verse. The title of this recital is Ladies First. Step out into the night. Queens of civilization are on the mic. The scene is ripe, the crowd is hype. I expel the whack and those who bite. Why? Cause I'm that type, swaying with beats 45 King style. He wants me to sing, but I'll swing, so meanwhile, a footnote for the opposite sex. Moni, rip the mic, I rock it next. Plex, you never catch me at my worst. You get the drift? It's Ladies First.
All right, that was Ladies First by the Queen Latifah on CITR 101.9 FM. And you are listening to special programming for International Women's Day. As I said before the song, my name is Madeline Taylor, and I am joined in studio today by Carly Baker. Carly, thanks for being here with me on International Women's Day.
Thanks for having me. I'm thankful to be here on the unceded ancestral territories of the Musqueam people and with you today at CITR.
Indeed. All right. So we are going to hear a couple readings from you from your about to be published book, Bad Endings. It's a collection of short stories. So before we get to that, can you tell me about how this project came together? How long has it been in the works for you?
Yeah, Bad Endings is about just about 9 years in the making. Some of these stories go back all the way. I was at a period of transition sort of in my life. And so a lot of these stories are about the end of relationships and things like that. And it was actually kind of like a Cinderella story, in not success-wise, but sort of identity-wise, because I was in the situation of not having any idea who I was and what I was going to do with my life. And I took a couple of courses at Douglas College, Community College, and even though I had been writing for years, I'd never really thought of writing as something that one does as a career, despite the fact that I'd done my undergrad in theater, because that was so much more practical. So I took a couple of writing courses and started working on stories And it was just a sort of like explosion for me as, wow, this is what I want to do. And I sort of am okay with being me. So these go back a long way. Of course, you're not perfect when you start out. You're not even really all that good. So a lot of the stories have grown and changed and been rewritten over the years. And that sort of brings it to where it is now.
How did you find that short stories became the main medium through which you expressed yourself as a writer?
Yeah, I love short stories. I love poetic language, and I like efficient language, which is strange because I'm just like a big talker in real life. But
that's super clear from reading your pieces. So,
yeah, cool. Yeah, okay, yeah. I'd like to be able to paint a picture with sort of the bare minimum. And I love, with a short story, there's more, I don't mean to diss the other genres, but there's more time, I find, to pay really close attention to language. I'm not sure I'm attempting a novel. It's going to be a completely different experience. But even as when I read, I often feel like there's just a bunch of stuff in here that we don't need. And that's my opinion, that I like to cut it to the core. I also love the way short stories, how there's this, you're just really focused in on a pivotal moment for a character. And that's actually, that's the most interesting part for me. I love characters at a moment of change or a moment of realization. So it's really never been any, like I've dabbled in other genres, but it's always sort of been short stories for me.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's get to it then. Let's hear you do a reading. And you said before we got on air here that you were going to read Exotica from your new book.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Exotica is, it's inspired. Most of my fiction is just sort of thinly veiled nonfiction, but Exotica is a mashup of a whole bunch of things, and it's inspired by a trip I took to the Yukon a couple of years ago in the summer with the midnight sun happening, and that was something. I lived up north, but I had never experienced the midnight sun because we always used to go south for the summer. So, it makes you kind of crazy. And sort of weird and emotional. And as I said, I was going through this story is, it's several years old, going through a period of transition. So this is sort of about that. Melanie is mad. I can tell by the way she's picking at her nails. Really long nails, lilac colored with little crystals. Pick, pick, pick. She has a new Coach purse in lilac. I was there when the UPS man delivered it yesterday. In the Yukon, you shop by mail. She has lilac throw cushions coming in the mail, too. She and Don have two cars and a nice duplex in Tokini, up on Two Mile Hill. A view of the city. It's all about the view, Don had said, standing on their porch with a scotch in his mitt. I don't get that. The White Horse view is all skinny trees and exfoliated hills. I guess you have to imagine Jack London in there somewhere, running around in a fur loincloth, even though Wikipedia says he wasn't actually up north for very long. I shouldn't have had so many beers. Xander and I shouldn't have had so many beers at that old-timey northern bar this afternoon. Or was it this morning? Time is disappearing. Melanie said they wanted to hike tonight in the midnight sun. Midnight Sunday hike on McIntosh Mountain, where the Olympic cross-country skiers train. The pre-hike tailgate party at the base of the mountain was Xander's idea. He's an ideas man. My man. Bison burgers and wheat beer with orange slices. Orange? No lemons, Melanie says. It's not always easy to get fresh citrus up here. Savages, Xander snarls. He spits into the barbecue. Melanie's eyes widen. Pick, pick, pick. Light all the time. The northern solstice is pulling the top off my skull, and I feel like a New Age cliche. The motifs are ravens, raven lunatics, and the ubiquitous light. Midnight sun in the coffee and pushing through the blackout blinds. The smells are lavender oil on the 600 thread count pillowcase I lay my head on at night, and pine in the air. Pine down at the footbridge over the green Yukon River, still a tangle of current even with the rapids blasted out. The trees are so scrawny here. The colors are red roses on the sheets and green rivers in the waking hours, but the light is inescapable, so where does that leave us? With magnets in our heads, nodding toward the poles. You should go see the Midnight Dome, Don says. No, really, you should go. The sun comes down and touches the horizon, and then it rises again. The Midnight Dome is in Dawson City, 8 hours from Whitehorse. When I lived up north, an 8-hour drive was not a big deal. That was a long time ago, years before Melanie and Dawn had ever been to Whitehorse. I think we'll stick around, I say. Melanie and Dawn look down at their fancy hiking shoes. So, ready to hike? Pick, pick, pick. Melanie's going to have to get new crystals put on. She and I were good friends at university, but she's been up north for a long time. Hold on, I say. One more round. You can drink while we walk, Dawn says. I'm tired of waiting. I feel like a New Age cliche because I want to talk about dreams, but what else is there to talk about in this sleep-wakefulness? My daytime self is nearly incoherent, but my nighttime self is busy writing happy endings to stress dreams, the ones lucidity usually cuts off before the finale. Frantic packing for a flight I know I'll miss, but last night, or was it this morning, I filled dream suitcases leisurely in black and white comic strip frames. Goodbyes in thought bubbles. Shook hands with my ex-husband and flew away. To Xander. A happy anticlimax. How did you guys meet? Melanie narrows her eyes at Xander. He's much younger than me. Poetry class, Xander says, puts an orange slice in his mouth and gives her a citrus grin. That's cheesy, Dawn laughs. He's much older than all of us. Xander shrugs, spits out the rind. Her husband caught us in bed. I was reading Rumi to her between thrusts. He had a dozen red roses and he threw them on the floor when he saw. Lovers in a Dangerous Time was playing. Ha! I say, wishing I had an irreverent cigarette to light. The roses part is true. There's a disc golf course at the base of the mountain. Old guys with silver ponytails and three wolf moon t-shirts are smoking weed. They nod, we nod. There's the 10-kilometer World Cup trail, Dawn says. That may be a bit much for you guys. He has short legs and a bit of a paunch, face shaped like a pear. He's lost weight since the last time I saw him at their wedding. It must be the gluten-free diet Melanie's got them on. Are you kidding? I say. Xander will carry me. He burps. That's right, honey. It's a black diamond trail, Melanie says. Sure, on skis, I say. Don't worry about us. Just take us to the best view, Dawn. He smirks a little. Okay. Even when we start to climb and the beer makes me wheeze a little, I keep up. We have to keep moving or the mosquitoes close in. They're much bigger up north, and they can latch on even in a stiff breeze. They bite along the hairline, on eyebrows, and easily right through denim. Bastards. The trails are wide and rolling, speckled with lupin and yarrow and some other tiny pink flower Melanie can't identify. Do you find the solstice makes you a bit squirrely? I ask her. Huh? The corners of her mouth turn down. No. Nothing? No funny dreams? No insomnia? It's the light, she says, but it doesn't bother Dawn and I anymore. Wildflowers and sunlight and dreams. There must be something else to talk about. Unicorns, I say aloud. What about them? Melanie says. Nothing. Up ahead, Dawn and Xander are not making man conversation. They're not making any conversation at all. Another dream from last night, free running through a Moroccan hotel courtyard, so lithe I'm on strings. This dream is usually a chase scenario set in a Toronto steel and glass venue of elevators trapped between floors. There's usually a bomb or some spies chasing me. This time it's exotic, curved awnings and stone passageways, pink flowered vines trail out of windows. I run for the feel of it, easy keeping ahead of unseen bad guys, and when I have my fill of movement and architecture, I stop. Then there's nothing left to do but walk into wakefulness. I'm laughing at how easy the end is, but it sounds like gasping when I open my eyes in Melanie and Dawn's guest room. Xander rolls an arm over me. It's okay, he whispers, just a dream, it's okay. I realize how seldom I let dreams run their course, preferring a smash cut into consciousness. We come to a one-room cabin with a fire pit out front. It's got a little wood stove inside as well, a couple of empty wine bottles. Someone smoked an entire pack of Craven M's and butted out each one on the wall, 20 black burn marks in a neat line with an empty box on the floor. Do you want to keep going? Dawn asks. I swat at my ankles. I don't think this should be our final destination. Melanie is bragging. Dawn is the head of his department now, and they've asked him to chair the board. Congratulations, I say. What kind of board? Xander asks. Dawn pauses. The Aboriginal Arts Advisory Board. Oh, Xander says, you're going to advise Aboriginals about how to make art? Xander's half Haida. Dawn isn't half anything, I don't think. He clears his throat. It's not like that. No? What's it like? Xander sounds dangerous, but I know he's joking. He loves to push a little. Dawn meets Xander's gaze. We help with grant money, organize shows. Dawn had to work hard to earn their respect, Melanie says. Whose respect? The Aboriginals? Xander grins. Good for him. Turn here. Dawn points to a marker sign painted on a canoe. The canoe is nailed to a tree. For the next few kilometers, we're away from the view into scrub forest. Xander and I will walk a little further ahead of Melanie and Dawn. Be nice, I say. These guys think they're a big deal, hey? Maybe they think we think we're a big deal. Xander pats me on the bum. I hadn't thought of that. Me neither, honestly, I say. Not until now. Is Xander mad? Melanie asks. When he steps away to relieve himself, Dawn keeps walking. No, I tell her. I'm not sure what else to say. I like him, she offers. He's playful. Yeah, I say. How are things since the divorce? She leans in close. Like, really? That's what the therapist is for, I guess. I don't want to have this conversation now. Not while the northern solstice is pulling the top off my skull and picking around, adding up numbers. But it's nice that she'd ask. Xander rejoins us. Where's Dawn? He asks. I need to let him off the hook. He's up ahead, Melanie says. She points up the path, but keeps her eyes on Xander. I'll run and catch up. Xander zigzags across the path, stiff arms, Mission Impossible style. He's so fit, Melanie says. I'm kind of jealous. I'm jealous of your nails, I say. And it's true, I am, kind of. And the lilac cushions coming in the mail, even though I haven't seen them yet. We walk along, quiet. The sun is as close as it's going to get to setting. We're almost at the view, Melanie says. You'll love it.
All right, thank you so much. So that was Carly Baker with Exotica, a short story from her new book, Bad Endings. All right, so before I get into the questions I had prepped, I'd love to talk a little bit about the reading you just did. Before you started the story, you mentioned that most of your stories are thinly veiled nonfiction and that you did have experiences living up north with the midnight sun and it driving you a little bit crazy. So if you had to choose, who in that story most reflects you and your experiences while you were up there?
It's the narrator is definitely me. Mm-hmm. In this story, for sure, although not all of the elements are. I mean, I've got a couple of buddies up north. Yeah. This is not reflective of my, yeah, love you, Mary.
Yeah.
that is part of who I am. And how when I get a little squirrely, that loss of control makes me so anxious. And I'm not sure if I'm saying or doing the right thing or what's happening. And also just like the perception, I think your perception expands quite a little bit when you're in this sort of destabilized place.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a big part of that story.
I noticed that in a lot of the other stories that I read from Bad Endings, water was a huge running theme. And in this one, it was a little bit more like plant life, and you brought up Raven. I like the idea of dream suitcases, too. That was a great line that stood out to me. But I was just wondering, how do you see the archetype of Raven playing into the backbone of this story?
Yeah, I should mention that although I am Cree Métis, I'm an outsider. I was raised outside of my community. So I think of the imagery that I use in my stories as nature imagery. I don't try for some kind of false connection with Indigenous imagery. So to be honest, the Raven came well in the Yukon. My friend had this coffee cup that I was drinking from one morning that had this raven with these sort of googly eyes that said Raven Lunatic.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, I just thought that is exactly how I feel right now. I feel like something is happening with me in nature. And this is a common thing for me, is just like there's some kind of connection here and there's some kind of importance here, but I can't put my finger on what. So I'm just going to focus on the craziness. I love ravens. I love crows. They're sassy and smart. And so it's something I think I would say that I I love what they do. And of course, they're all over, White Horse, they're all over the Yukon making their sort of gonking noises. When I was a kid, or not a kid, when I guess was a preteen living in Cassiar, which is just 2 hours south of the Yukon border. Yukoners would say that's totally not north, but it was like crazy north compared to what I was used to at the time. My parents and I used to sit on the patio outside and try to like imitate the raven gonks. And the crows were all doing that. They were all doing the clicks the other day here in Vancouver. And I was just like, what's up? Something's in the works, something big.
I love watching crows and ravens once you get into the forest reacting to the weather and your presence and everything. They're pretty influential. They don't fade into the background, that's for sure.
Yeah, it feels like they're watchers, like mm-hmm. they're keeping tabs on you or something. And I don't know, and that's all just instinct that makes me feel that way.
Definitely. My mom is a mountain biker, and when she gets really deep into the forest and she's biking by herself, she says that the ravens follow her, and it makes her feel pretty comfortable, actually. Anyways, that's a nice lead-in. I'd like to talk about your origins. It says in your bio that you were born on Stolo territory, which I believe is Langley. Is that correct?
Yeah, Mission. Where I was born.
Okay. What kind of connection? You mentioned that you don't ascribe to like false connection with Indigenous stories because you were raised an outsider. So I wanted to ask, what kind of connection did you have to your Indigenous roots growing up?
Yeah, it's a bit of a fraught story, but one that I'm happy to tell. Okay. Because positionality is important. I had a challenging relationship with my Métis grandmother growing up. My parents both come from backgrounds. My mom, who is settler Icelandic, and my dad, who is Cree Métis, both parents came from a background of abuse and alcoholism and occasionally violence. So they made what must have been a very difficult decision to separate themselves from their family members. And we kind of formed this little Baker island. They moved out into the woods. We sort of just did our own thing. And there were, it's not like I didn't get to know these people, but it's sort of my background was just a series of negotiations, reconciliations, and then breaks with family members in various states of mental health. So I got to know family members, but it was always sort of through this protective veil. We need to protect ourselves from these people because we don't know if they're safe. Mm. My Métis grandmother, Grandma Carrière, she also wanted no part of her Métis ancestry. She wasn't proud of being Cree or French, as it turns out. So it was something that I wouldn't say it was hidden, but it's just one of these things that just doesn't come up. My dad, growing up in Mission had a residential school that was operational until quite late. It was bulldozed, and the land has actually been returned, and there's I think there's just a memorial on there now, but there's also an interpretive center where you can go and learn about the past of the residential school there. When my dad used to take me to powwows up in the area when I was a kid, but I just want, it was not ever, this was not ever presented to me as, this is an important thing that you should know about who you are. Of course, the powwows wouldn't have been, my Métis family comes from the Red River settlement in Manitoba. So it was, it just wasn't a part of who I was. When my grandmother died, there was a sort of a bit of a family reconciliation, and I met my Métis, the rest of my Métis extended family, for the first time ever. And when my dad spread my grandma's ashes into the Alouette River, which was the river that he grew up on, these folks that I didn't really know what to make of them. They're just like such an interesting group of people, bikers and all kinds of folks sort of like held out their hands as far as welcome to the family, welcome to the community. And then I really quickly did something that is just a really common mistake, I think, for Dr. Chris Anderson has this book, this brilliant book called Métis, and he's coined this term called late onset indigeneity, which is great. And
yeah,
I
that is great.
Like I bumbled into that, like just your stereotypical idiot thinking like, great, well, I'm Métis, this is this blood that I have, awesome, now I'm in. And it's taken years. That was probably when I was about 30. It's taken years for me to understand that you can't step sideways into a community you weren't raised in. So I'm thankful to be a part of my family community and to have reconnected with them. And I'm very excited and always very thankful when members of the community are willing to, I won't even say accept is a weird word, but even just to let me hang with them. But I consider my role to be a settler and an ally. And my job is to elevate Indigenous voices. And I'm lucky that I also get to be a writer and write about that. And I also feel, I guess the last, I feel like I'm rambling on here.
No, you're good.
Okay. I will always write about my own experience. I only consider myself a spokesperson for myself. And I do think that reconnecting with your identity, with your Métis identity, is a shared experience. So I do think that I have a story to tell, but it's not, my job isn't to tell other people's stories. I can tell my own. And that is about someone trying to reconnect and all of the myriad mistakes that I've made and the learning that has happened while I've been doing this. So that's where I want to be as a writer.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of the Baker Island that you mentioned, that your immediate family of your mom and dad and sister, do you have other siblings or?
Yeah, younger sister.
Younger sister.
Yeah.
That you mentioned. In your dedication, you thank your parents who, and I quote, are only satisfied when I'm being my true self. And you also talk about your brave sister. So I wanted to ask you about your sister, your relationship with her.
Yeah, we have struggled a lot with mental illness in my family, all of us. So my sister and I share an anxiety issue. This is a challenging thing for me because it's not something about myself that I feel like I'm presenting myself as a victim or something, a victim of anxiety and if that's how some people feel, that is fine. But I have always tried to position myself on the survivor end.
Mm-hmm.
Now, anxiety manifests itself in many different ways in different people. So me as the older sister and Madeline, the younger sister, I would say it kind of hit us in almost like stereotypical older younger sister ways. I am I'm a high achieving anxious person. I will just like whip myself into the ground in order to succeed. And then as a result, sometimes I have long periods of anxiety induced rest time required. My sister has really been through a lot of challenges with the mental health system. A misdiagnosis for several years that led us all to believe that there was a very different, she was struggling with a very different issue. She has just pulled herself through so much over the years, recognizing issues with addiction and mental health. And she's clawing herself back to a position that she'd like to be in. She's a writer as well. She wrote, I guess it was like, it's kind of before, this is a long time ago, but it was sort of before dystopian YA was cool. She wrote this amazing, this novel, this entire novel. I think she was like 16 or something like that, dystopian YA novel. And I know we'll see it in print someday, I'm positive. And she's a singer. And a lot of this stuff had to be put on hold while she was going through this process of evolution. And I'm so proud of her. And I've revealed a lot in my book about our relationship that she hasn't read yet. So hopefully she's cool with that. I love you, Madeline.
Thank you for sharing that. Yeah, I think... especially relating back to it being International Women's Day, struggling with mental illness and coming to terms with what your capacity is as a woman dealing with mental illness and working through the system itself is so incredibly challenging. And so anyone who has the strength to get through that, be creative, and be open about it, I feel deserves the utmost respect. So, and to be honest, I have a similar relationship with my younger sister. So it's interesting to hear that reflected, that maybe that's a typical thing that people experience all over the place.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. It's so important to be able to share those stories as well so that people feel seen when they're experiencing invisible illness in that way. I noticed in many of your stories that the main character is a woman going through an ending, obviously. The title is Bad Endings, though I didn't get the sense from what I read that every ending was bad. So I was wondering how the title Bad Endings relates to what I read as like variations on transition and kind of like tumult in a woman's life. How do you feel like those two things connect?
Yeah, there's a couple things. The book was actually originally called Bad at Endings, because that's something that my mom always says to me. You're bad at endings, honey. You're just bad at endings. You hang on too long. So, and she's right. She's totally right. She nailed me there. But the editor suggested that Bad Endings was maybe catchier. And I think they were right.
Yeah.
And also that I'm being a bit cheeky here as well, because when I was a younger reader, I hated stories that ended in without like a sort of a little wrapped up in a bow ending, and where you were just sort of like that they almost opened up more questions than provided you answers. And as the years went on, I started to love these stories, and I actually really, really work hard to find a way of giving audiences enough so that they feel like, okay, well, that narrative came to a conclusion, but to leave things a little bit hanging in a way in the hopes that maybe people will think a little bit more after they finish the story. But I know that ticks people off. So I'm also just being a little bit cheeky here in that I wonder if some people will read these and be like, what the hell? I don't understand what this ending means. And hopefully then their next step will be to think a little bit more about it. And because very much like a poem, you can ruminate on a short story after you're done with it. And maybe it'll open up new things for you.
Mm-hmm. I find especially because so much of the sense of place that you create in the short stories is specific to Vancouver, or territories that readers might be familiar with if they're from this region or they've spent time in this region. So it's very easy to be. I don't want to use the word triggered, but reminded of the motifs and the struggles that you explore in your writing just by being around in this city. There are a couple different stories that reference areas of public transit, and I was reading some on the bus the other day, and then I came to the Commercial Drive SkyTrain station, and I sort of was like, oh, right, Karina, dealing with the, you know, giving out 24-hour Metro papers. And so there are all of these images that are so familiar and relatable that, I really loved as little vignettes throughout the stories. Great. So I think we're going to take a little break for a song here before we get into what I guess is going to be the end of our hour together on air. So you sent me a few different songs at the beginning when we started prepping for this, and we already played one of them, Queen Latifah, Ladies First. So I was thinking it might be great to play the song that you sent by Buffy St. Marie and Tanya Tagak. Do you want to talk about why you chose that song?
Yeah, I mean, what a couple of powerhouses. And I was so stoked to hear that they were going to work together. And I hope a whole album comes out of this. So I love it that we're still listening to Buffy St. Marie. She's still offering us wisdom so many years later. And in my opinion, Tanya Tagak is just a warrior. I saw her, it wasn't even a Tagak performance. We were watching a group called White Horse perform, and she came out and just did this little cameo, and I melted down. That raw energy, I respect, and the political stance that she takes on things, her the way she's so active in the community, I respect both of these women so much.
Agreed. They're fantastic. And I adore both of them. And I'm so happy that the Polaris Music Prize has finally taken to honoring Indigenous women who are geniuses. Okay, so this is Buffy St. Marie and Tanya Tagak. You got to run Spirit of the Wind on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from unceded Musqueam territories for International Women's Day. We'll be right back.
See yourself a winner beyond the money and the greed. Beyond the prize is a pure untested need. And to be a champion is more than luck and speed. It's power and freedom in the spirit of the wind.
Wednesday, March 8th is International Women's Day, and we're taking over the grid for a day of 100% FemCon, featuring interviews with Katherine Gretzinger of the CBC, music and talk programming. Listen at 101.9 FM or CITR.ca to hear CITR's take on International Women's Day from 6 a.m. to midnight this Wednesday.
Are you interested in Indigenous issues?
Are you down with decolonization?
Do you have something to say?
Or have a topic to share?
We have just the thing.
Join UBC's first ever Indigenous Radio Collective.
We're a team of Indigenous and non-Indigenous people.
I'm Niskat from my mother.
From the Tahltan Territory.
I'm a settler from Washington State.
I'm from the Qualicum and Musqueam First Nations.
I am Quichua Indigenous from Saraguro, Ecuador.
We broadcast from the traditional, ancestral, and unceded land
of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
Whatever you want to talk about, we're into it.
Everyone is welcome, no experience necessary.
Unceded Airwaves airs every Tuesday from 11:30 to 1 p.m. on CITR 101.9 FM or at CITR.ca.
Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Unceded Airwaves.
We want to hear your story.
All right. Just before the break there, you heard a song by Tanya Tagak and Buffy St. Marie. Carly, what was it called again?
Oh
my gosh, we've both forgotten.
Oh no.
That's okay. You know what? I have the internet, so I can figure this out right now. It was called You Got to Run. There we go. We're on it. Okay, so my name's Madeline Taylor. We are talking about Carly Baker's brand new collection of short stories, Bad Endings. We were doing a little bit of question and answer before the break there, and she did a reading from her book, a short story called Exotica. So if you're just tuning in and you want to hear that, you can find the podcast at CITR.ca after today is over, when we will have time to podcast it. So, all right. So I want to jump back in to learning more about you, Carly. So there are a few different things I'd love to talk about here in the last couple of minutes that we've got. But one thing, because it's International Women's Day, I read something that you posted on Facebook the other day that was talking about how you didn't always write female main characters in your stories, and that's been a bit of a process for you finding those voices. So I was hoping you could talk about that. What was that process, and how has that come to be such a strong and central part of the way that you've conceptualized this collection of stories?
Yeah, I sort of, as I kind of mentioned earlier, the with some issues in my extended family, the female role models in my life were problematic, and there was a lot of conflict there. And when the female role models in your life are sort of either tyrants or alcoholics, there's you growing up, a person might have a complex relationship with femininity, and I would say that I did. When I started writing, when I left high school, I sort of noticed that leaving home for the first time, there's this feeling of wanting to protect yourself or wanting to appear strong, and that was actually more important for me than wanting to appear cool or whatever to fit in. And I cut my hair off and started to, I mean, this was in the 90s, so it was pretty popular back then, but it was the work boots, and I adopted a fairly traditionally masculine look for myself. And even a bit of a swagger. And this was because I associated strength with masculinity. I wasn't sure what feminine strength looked like. So as time progressed, and I wish I could, I don't even know if I can relate it to, I think it just took time and getting to know people. And it's actually even my relationship with my femininity has taken a big jump even since coming to UBC as well, and meeting younger people, just people from all different walks of life, and understanding that what it means to me, what feminine strength looks like, being vulnerable, allowing yourself to be vulnerable and emotional. I felt I needed to protect myself from saying anything like that. And as you write, as you progress as a writer, you have no choice but to be vulnerable in front of people. So I would write these male characters, and they were projections of me. They were me, but I just didn't understand emotional complexity. Not that men aren't also emotionally complex, but I was really, really doing like a binary here as far as where I saw women, where I saw men. We're lucky, really lucky to be in times right now where these conversations are foregrounded and are happening all the time. Thank you to the millennials who are leading these conversations. I'm a bit of an old gal, and I'm just really thankful that we get to talk about this and reevaluate this now. So after a while, I think someone pointed out to me, I wish I could remember who, why do you always write men? And I said all of this like trite stuff about, you know, men are easier to understand. There was just this kind of like, okay, cool. And then I just got to think about it and thought, okay, well, let's try women. The story War of Attrition, which is the first story in Bad Endings, is about a female friendship. And it's still a weird female friendship. There's still a bunch of stuff that isn't right in it. But that, I realized that I loved writing about that stuff. And then as the years progress, I realized that it's actually important to write about that stuff. I don't, maybe not my job necessarily, but it is my duty to bring these stories out so that people can read them. Women don't get enough female friendship stories to read that aren't just like laden with cliches. And we know that that's not the reality. So it's gone from me not knowing how I related to basically dabbling to now feeling like this is an important and like beloved part of my process.
Yeah. Female friendship comes up repeatedly throughout the book, and as does divorce. But I want to focus more on how female friendship worked for you going through transitions and endings in relationships with romantic partners.
Yeah. I feel pretty open today, but since I have been an emotionally closed person, you sort of, you know, your friends, you end up hanging with people kind of like you. And so I've had some really good female friends over the years that, again, relate to each other in a similar way, where you might just have an awkward conversation, some tears might be shed, it's cool, okay, you can sort of be yourself. And so there's not this sort of, again, this like Hollywood idea of, you know, this chick lit kind of situation, hanging out, doing a thing, whatever, painting our toenails. But and I would say that it's probably occasionally female friends who have been willing to hold me accountable for my actions and politely suggest, or even to just point out. My mom has played a big role in that as well. My mom listens to like all of my crap. And again, really since arriving at UBC, becoming a member of the creative writing community, I'm so thankful for my female friends there and my male friends as well, and being a member of the Indigenous Collective. I actually, after being a bit of a solo person with just one or two friends, all of a sudden there are a lot of women in my life and a lot of women willing to point out potentially problematic ideas that I have, having grown up away from strong female role models. So, and me just watching other people, watching women, I do a lot of that. I just kind of, what are they saying? How are they acting? How are they responding? Look at how brave that was, what she just said. There are a lot of really brave writers out there. Being really, Room Magazine, I have to really thank Room Magazine for presenting this when the Galloway thing just keeps going and going and going, and I don't want to even give that a lot of airtime. But during the latest hit, Room Magazine opened up a space for women to write about their experiences with sexual assault called No Comment, and I contributed a piece to that. The only reason I contributed a piece to that was because of the role models, the women that I saw doing this and being honest about a part of a really difficult part of their lives. So it's been a lot of watching for me and learning and reevaluating.
Amazing. I want to do a quick shout out. Room Magazine, we're actually doing a live broadcast from their launch party this evening, starting at 8:30. And unfortunately, I'm in the middle of a coughing fit, so we're going to have to close it off there. But Carly, I want to say thank you so much for coming on air with me today and for talking about your new book, Bad Endings.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Excuse me. So this is International Women's Day. You are listening to CITR 101.9 FM, and we are going to finish things off here with Brushing by Heaven's Shoulder by Kim Wardle, a local artist. Thanks again, Carly, so much. We'll talk later.
All right.
Heaven on earth is broken. I wanna give birth to words unspoken, but I'm choking. Everybody trying to be seen on screen, force feed me a scene. I'm just trying to intervene. Too deep for the mainstream, too street for Ivy Leagues. University is robbing money, still buying coffee, no cream. Telling him in my color of melanin. Got soul, but not a whole lot of green. Too few stop to think, they're busy building the machines. Accumulate the sense, common sense to me. To pen these rhymes lightly, ZZ. I'm tired of the same old shit. Cookie cut that ish, copy paste generic. Locate my remix and my wordplay. Twist, turn the page, study my resist.
As I'm rushing by heaven's shoulder, I hope I'm getting bolder. But as I'm brushing by heaven's shoulder, I hope I'm getting bolder.
Call a girl a bitch loud, I'm so rude. In a man's world, working harder than the dude. Do your mathematics, stats on the maxes. Equations, she can't claim on her taxes. My broke back is collapsing from kissing ass too fast while the time is ticking. Murdered and missing, too many women, too many queens dead on the scene. Never forgotten, forever missed. I remember you on my canvas. Paint your crown, miss. Loud and proud, misunderstood. With this world flipped attitudes, didn't exclude more gratitude. Indigenous lives misconstrue the truth. I used to pray to a white God, now I head nod church in the booth. Cause God isn't no limit, she's in his Adidas. Dancing nowhere and in between us, synonymous to androgynous. You a Nazi, why do we divide and conquer? Why do we divide and conquer?
Brushing by heaven's shoulder, I hope I'm getting bolder. But as I'm brushing by heaven's shoulder, I hope I'm getting bolder.
Why does it seem like I can never finish? Like I'm only up for glimpses, freshen on the surface. If I'm worth it, don't mean I'm perfect. I'm pushing on a limit, I ain't trying to stay in it. They say you're ungrateful, you think too far ahead. Don't you see what's right in front of you? Use your head. I use my heart instead. I never trade it for a ticket to your walking dead. I drop my heart in every track, watch it overflow. Blood, sweat, tears on my mic at the show. Could drown any motherfucker in my ill flow. They'll just say I'm really good for a girl, though. No place in the books written. Out of histories, overlooked for crooks, so I keep spitting. For all the aliens, I rise above the clones. And sometimes I feel alone, but the stage is my home.
I'm rushing by heaven's shoulder. I hope I'm getting bolder. But as I'm rushing by heaven's shoulder, I hope I'm getting bolder.
You're listening to CITR 101.9.
broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the